Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
We're back live, Mitch Hanks Show, MadisonTalks.com, Facebook Live. Madison Police Chief Mike Koval joins me now, and hello, Chief.
Hey, how are you, Mitch?
Well, I'm doing okay, and we just talked to Kleem Kerr, who had a lot of things to say, but even Kleem was certainly in favor of more officers on the streets in the short run, talked about some other issues too, but I think, isn't that where we are with the people in the community? Certainly, I'm in favor of it. I talk to people who live in at-risk neighborhoods who are in favor of that. But yet we have this dynamic in Madison, which you can't, I'm sure, talk about too much, but there's this need for both investigating the police and refusing requests for more officers. So it seems like there's a disconnect between political leaders and the people on the street.
Well, I think that's probably a fair synopsis, Mitch. I would concede that. As you well know, I tried in late April to give a thumbnail sketch of a particularly prolific eight-hour stretch where we had two armed robberies, both savagely administered to their victims, as well as four confirmed shots fired called with shell casings and property damage. And in context to that, I really felt the need, at the urging also of our public information officer, Joel Despain, who could not recall such a spate of violence, that we really needed to get out in front of it because y'all in the media were blitzkrieging them. And so I said, fine. And as a result of sort of using that as a sort of a lens, a reality lens on what's happening in our community, I was sort of called out and dressed down and told and admonished that there'll be no place for that in the context of trying to jockey for position in the budgetary game. And so I'm trying to be circumspect in that, but at the same time, I feel I'm duty-bound to talk about these issues because those are not isolated offenses, as we've seen, regrettably, as a community over the past few months.
Well, what doesn't change is the conflict in debate. Progressives will say because of the gun show loopholes in Indiana is causing the problems, and conservatives, or the factory closed 10 years ago and there's no hope, or conservatives will talk about the lack of fathers. Can't we all say that fathers are important regardless of our political bent?
Amen. I think you should be our latter-day saint of Henry Kissinger here. If you can create that healthy common ground between those sort of factions, then there is a political future for you. God knows I have not mastered it, as anyone can attest to.
Well, I mean, I was there at that famous meeting. We've talked about it about 10 years ago, St. Marie Goretti. They wanted like 60 more cops, and I think they added like 30. I'm not sure what the final thing was.
It was 30. They wanted 50. They ended up with 30. And you could knock me over with a feather if I could get anything like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, people want to be safe in the short run. Then we can talk all we want about root causes, but this idea that midnight basketball is going to solve all our problems, or we can have a 15-point plan to have more peacemakers. Well, once we reach the point of having guns used against other human beings, we're kind of late in the game, aren't we? The fourth quarter, parking lot's half empty?
I agree. I agree completely with that because I am not against, as you know, I'm not against creating some social safety nets and preventive measures looking at a four-quarter game, if you will. But you're right, to use your metaphor, that doesn't help me right here with the reality of the fact that our shots fired is clearly up over 63% over what it was last year at this time. We've got 78% of those calls being targeted. We've got 53 instances where those shots fired are generating property damages. And we have over 25 people who have been if not indirectly, hit by bullets and or the shrapnel it's caused or by the glass shattering. So that's very tangible for me. That's what I have to do. My premise is the win theory. You know, I'm going to invoke my favorite Lou Holtz from the coach of Notre Dame. So for my,
go ahead there, coach. Yeah.
For my practical existence and survival, it's what's important now. What's important now is we need to address what's happening in real time before we can build that new city on a hill that everybody wants, and so do I. We got to put out the fire. And the fire is that the house is on fire. So that's the problem. That's what's at conflict here.
I was reading the story today, talked about the mayor's proposed up to $1,000 reward for information about illegal guns, guns used illegally in crimes and so forth, or illegally held. Mm-hmm. And it said there had been no calls yet. No calls. I mean,
Well, and again, I guess everybody is grasping for whatever things that they think might make a difference in saving lives. And so I'm not faulting anybody for their suggestions, but in terms of substantive effects, in terms of moving the needle, what we really need are those people to feel whether they, you know, we have Crime Stoppers, so we can literally, if you can get us information and that information can help us make some arrests, we actually can not only cloak you with anonymity, you can be assigned a number, a check can be written to the to the informant or the anonymous tipster, and we'll never have face-to-face contact with those individuals. So we do sort of have a mechanism in place for things like that. And frankly, we need people in the community talking and coming forward much more so than sort of the ceremonial programs that people get trotted out that have limited or varying successes.
Well, I would wonder, too, and I know it's not your job to be a social engineer. Your job is to enforce the law. But having been a substitute teacher in recent times, I mean, the lack of discipline is often a topic of interest with other veteran subs. You know, they'll compare it to 20 years ago or 30. I mean, it really is disturbing. And you can talk about it all day long, but I mean, when you compare it to when you were young or when I was younger, you couldn't do the things that are being done now and get away with it. I mean, so say what
you
will.
Absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, I do in fact have some teacher friends who are colleagues who are now retired. A, there was a beeline of these teachers that were taking early retirement incentives and options because some of the atmospheric conditions has become so toxic and they don't feel supported. And some of them now, even though subbing, have expressly stated that there are some middle schools that they will not go to. They just will not go back there because the environment is so enabling or so non-supportive of any sort of disciplinary cues that it's just not worth whatever money they're making that day. So I don't think that's a perception. My research says that that's a very heartfelt reality that I hear a lot.
Well, I remember being falsely accused of throwing a paper wad when another kid threw it and his teacher grabbed me by the hair. And he said, "You want to play? You want to play?" And I said, "No, I don't, actually." But I mean,
You weren't a product of Catholic school. That sounds like a good foundation.
This was a public school, but if you grab a kid by the hair now over a paper wad, I mean, you'd be facing hard time.
You know it.
I'm not advocating for violence.
I get it. But
in the schools,
the times have definitely changed the attitudes and the tolerances. You know, and I am completely empathetic to the plight and the challenges of the public school system. We've talked about this before. If you've got 27,000 students and half of them qualify for federal breakfast, lunch, and dinner subsidies, you've got an impoverished group of kids.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
number becomes even more exacerbated by those kids who have enrolled and self-identified as kids of color. That number rises to 70%. So the challenges are very real for today's educator as well, and I'm completely empathetic with it, but I do think that in some regards that we do a disservice to our youth when There's a greater deal, more of toleration supplied for the classroom behavior or lack thereof, or the lack of decorum. And then if that same behavior manifests itself, let's say, in a food court on a weeknight, the kid's scratching because he doesn't understand why the police officer is escorting them out for a disorderly conduct ticket.
Well, and good luck with your job interview down the road. I mean, you know, there's a lack of tolerance in that area. You know,
yeah.
Spend enough with misspelled words on your resume. I mean, there's just got to be a reality. But as we wrap things up, Chief, I would think that, what about community? We talk about community policing. I know it's great when you have the police officer or officers in the neighborhood developing relationships with youth. That's great. Is that, why do we do that more? Just funding, lack of money?
Well, quite frankly, our ability to do that is also a fact of life because of the staffing. There was an Etico, a commission study that we paid, the city paid over $50,000 for a number of years ago. And they basically said, if you truly want to subscribe to the tenets of community policing, then in an hour of an officer's time, 30% should, 50% of that should be obligated time doing calls for service and reporting, and the other 30 minutes should be for the engagement, the outreach, the creating those opportunities for trust building. And because the calls for service have gone up and our staffing is at critical mass, we're finding over the course of workload analysis that our time to do the engagement stuff is starting to diminish. It's starting to suffer. And that's another reason we need staffing, because if all we're going to be as cops, as traditional call and responders, only coming when there's crisis, only coming when a ticket needs to be written or someone needs to get hauled off to jail, then that is clearly not going to be a mechanism to win the hearts and minds and build trust,
no,
particularly among our underrepresented minority population.
I have noticed, though, that police cars or cruisers or whatever have more lights now. I see the lights.
God,
it's like a Christmas tree.
I mean, oh, babe, yeah, you kidding?
I mean, it just, like, gives me a, what's going on here? I had one of those. I had a taillight out once, and I had this massive display of lights right on me. I was scared to death.
Well, I'll tell you, today I pulled over. You know, I'm trying to be the pace car at the Indy 500 on that damn Beltline.
Yes.
So understanding I'm going to create a traffic quagmire, I may have, truth be told, be trying to go about 60 and a posted 55. I admit it.
Yeah.
So as people are, one lady literally blew my doors off going 80, and so I felt compelled to pull her over. And when I got my big toe out of the car, I can see why we light up these cars. I felt like I was the matador in a bull ring playing Ole. I thought I was going to be killed.
Oh, my.
So, yes, they light those things up for a reason.
Well, I must say, it gets your attention, that's for sure.
It does.
Now, I'm one of those people, I might as well confess, I'm a person who, when I see a police car, I just feel guilty automatically, because whatever I've done.
I'm telling you, I know you weren't raised as such, but I think you have a healthy DNA of Catholic guilt.
Well,
I really believe that.
Well, my mother was Italian and full Catholic, so we.
Well, there you
my
go.
My father was Methodist. We're kind of mixing back and forth.
I didn't have to charge you at Ancestry.com. I could just read it in your thought patterns.
But I'm telling you, all the guilty things I've done my whole life come to the fore every time I see a police officer. There's got to
be
some.
Well, I'll be honest. I think those of us who've even been in the trade, when we see that lights going up, I used to recruit in 5 states, and I had been pulled over once or twice, and my heart goes a pitter patter. Not to mention wondering how I was going to explain that to my boss.
Well, what should we say to the patrolman who says, "Do you want to know? Tell me why you were going 10 miles over the speed limit." I mean, what is a good answer there, Chief? I'm just curious, just with your.
I'll tell you. First of all, everybody has their own sort of what's your internal tolerance level, and sometimes that changes because if it's the beginning of school and you're doing school zone enforcement, it's going to be a little bit more draconian. If you're on the Beltline and you can actually get ahead of steam, which I find near impossible with all the traffic construction, that will vary because of the pace of the traffic and the time of day. You know, again, we're not being...
I don't think your officers... I'm talking about maybe the Fox Valley Patrol officer. I've had some bad experiences. So I think your cops are well-trained there. But
well,
man.
I'll tell you, the other day, one of my motorcycle cops came in, and you thought that the guy had hooked a muskie. He felt the need to come in off the street and hold up proudly his readout on his taser. And he was on the Beltline. A woman blew by him. He pulled over, pulled her over on laser. "What do you think you were going, ma'am?" She says, "Oh, probably 80, 85. She was going 102.
Oh, said, my.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I guess I was moving. But she took her medicine. She did not dispute it.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you're guilty, you're guilty. But I yep. just look at the cop and I say, well, I'm just a worthless human being. I mean, what am I going to say? I was a failed child. You know, I just,
no,
you know.
My deal is, for me, my own personal predilection is that, A, if you actually acknowledge and say, you got me.
You
I'm
got
sorry.
Me, yeah. Oh, sure.
I tend to be a lot more lenient than playing these games. And the other thing is, quite frankly, my thing is I ask people, so what am I going to find when I run your driver's license? What kind of a driver's license you have? Is this an anomaly or sort of what you get?
No. You're going to have fun with that one. I'll see. Go ahead.
The woman I pulled over today said, you are going to find that I have an impeccable record. I said, okay, well, let's make a deal. If I find any moving points, because today you're 15 over. If I find any moving points, it's going to be paper time. And she was good as gospel, good to her word, as so was I. I said,
good for her.
Drive on.
Well, did I ever tell you, and I shouldn't do this, but it was like 10 years ago or 15 or whatever the case, and I think I had two Long Island teas and like two screwdrivers after golf, and I was legally dead, I think, when I drove downtown. I was going to the karaoke or something, and I think I turned left on a red light right by the police station or something, and the guy puts the lights on, and I remember my friend had this dark look on his face like I was going to the dungeon, and he walked over, and I knew I was just screwed for, you know, and I just said, oh, hello there, officer, I can't believe when I did that. I go, man, you look familiar. And he kind of went, oh, I go, Mitch Hank, how you doing? And he just goes, maybe the farmer's market. That's where it was. And I go, it's good to see you again. And I swear to God, he said, okay, well, I'll just give you a warning. But
there you go. But I will tell you, though, anytime, you know, you could be a 0.35 and the officer gets, what are you drinking tonight? Two or three beers, and I wonder, what's the size of those tankards? It's always two or three beers for some reason.
Well, I know. But I got to tell you, I've been so horrified by that experience that I've not had more than like two sips since, you know, going in the car.
I have more than compensated for your digression with my Jameson. So.
Oh, jeez. Well, Chief, it's great to have you on the show, and I know you're out there trying to protect people, but I think regardless of background or race or anything else, people want to be safe first.
Yeah,
and then we can
and
argue.
I'll tell you, last night, Mitch, great outpouring at the community room. It sort of had that vibe, that feel of St. Maria Goretti's from 2007, 2008, whatever it is. And I think people clearly are at their wits' ends. This has gone beyond the domain of their perceptions. They feel it, and so do we. And there are statistical support for some of those concerns. We haven't lost the streets by any means. We're doing better in just about all of our other categories. But in this area of gun violence, we're clearly trending the wrong direction. We got to do better, and we will.
Chief Koval, great to have you on the show. And, if we get to basketball, then I hope Butler beats Notre Dame.
Wait.
But all right.
Notre Dame's looking good right now. We're looking good. I like our backcourt.
Oh, well, he's a good coach, man.
He is good.
A lot of turtlenecks. Thank you, Chief. Chief, we appreciate it. That was Chief Koval, and it's great to have him on the show. And we'll come back with more on this on the Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com.